What's going on, Osmo Golf Crew? This is the PGA First Look here at Osmo.com. I'm sitting sidecar next to Max, next to Jeff. You know them. They are the familiar faces. I'm the unfamiliar face to this Monday show, but I'm so stoked to be here filling in for Jason for the day. He's going to be on the Wednesday Live Before Lock show. I'm going to be on with Ben tomorrow. We're mixing things up a little bit, but Max, how you doing, my guy?
Dude, it's such a pleasure to be on with you guys right before the U.S. Open, especially with this, like, Palmetto Championship.
That sounded so sarcastic.
That we just got off of. I mean, it's like, it's nice to have a course we know. Right. Like, I hate guessing, like, how's this course going to play? It has only bunkers, no rough. Like, I was all confused all over the place last week, which showed in the fact that I lost every single dollar on the main slate. But now, like, we know Torrey. It's been around forever. We know what types of golfers to target. So let's go.
That sounds great. And Jeff Ulrich, he needs no introduction. How are you doing this week?
I'm doing good, man. Yeah, same kind of feeling. You know, last week, it's okay to have one of those weeks, I guess, where we, like, dive in. We don't know too much about it. But it's nice to have this to follow it up. And, I mean, we know Torrey. We know the U.S. Open. And another big major, man. I'm expecting some good drama here, so.
Yeah, well, maybe not 08 drama, but we're looking for something. I'll take anything at this point in time that could be akin to it. Hopefully Tiger's doing well. I'm thinking about him every single day because that's the kind of guy that I am, just obsessed with the man. But as you guys are getting in here, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. Goes a long way for us. We're getting up early here on the West Coast to help you out, talking through all of the goodies that are the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines. We'll get into it here in a second, but how did last week go for you, Max? I think we were talking a little bit before the show. Not that we don't need to talk about it too much, but we both hit a nice little outright, didn't we?
Yeah, Higo, my boy. I was playing him in the Euro when it was in South Africa. Like, I don't know if COVID was still going on, but it was a long time ago. Yeah, and then, you know, of course, I had to get on him this week just because he was going to be the lowest owned guy in DFS. And I was like, 50-1 or whatever. It wasn't bad picking that up. And then, of course, DJ decided to have the worst round of the week when I played him in the showdown. Ended up taking second place in the 5-5-5 tournament.
But
if you made par on 18, it was a 10K hit. But, of course, he decided to bogey it from 150 yards in the fairway.
I have no bad beat stories ever. I have none. Actually, I had five.
It's not a bad beat. It's just going. Like, come on, DJ. Get your shit together, buddy.
Yeah, one day. Jeff, how was last week for you too?
I don't know, man. It was kind of weird. Like, I'm glad it's over. I mean, my guys all cratered on Sunday, just folded like cheap suits. Harris English, 3 birdies in 4 holes. I was just counting the outright money there. And then they just, I don't know what happened on the back nine. He turned, I guess someone reminded him he was Harris English. But yeah, it was good. I mean, I don't know. Break even week DFS. I'm just glad I survived the Palmetto Championship. And I was like the only one apparently who didn't bet Garrett Hago too. So, you know, whatever. I'm happy the US Open's here.
You have 2 of 3. You know what? You can redeem yourself. You can pick the outright this week. I'll allow that. We've got a betting preview coming up here later in the show. We're going to be firing up a couple of our bets, talking about some of the directions that you can go here at the US Open. But let's just kind of start getting into it. Today, our show is sponsored by Monkey Knife Fight. Their player prop-based contests are easy to play. They don't require the same amount of time commitment. I've really enjoyed playing their NBA product here. I've been talking a little bit of that with Greg Ehrenberg the last couple weeks. But with Monkey Knife Fight, you are the one in charge. So whether you play that NBA, UFC, PGA, esports, soccer, it doesn't really matter. Monkey Knife Fight has just about every sport you can imagine. So head over there and use promo code OSMO in order to get $100, you get $100 free first match deposit bonus when you sign up using that promo code. So check it out, monkeyknifefight.com. Thank you so much for the sponsorship. But let's start digging in. We've got the 121st iteration of the U.S. Open. Over the course of the last, like, 3 decades, I would say, the U.S. Open has kind of become extremely diabolical in a lot of the ways that they set up the courses. It's the second time we're going to see it at Torrey Pines. It's 2008, the historic Tiger-Rocco playoff that we saw. I know exactly where I was when that happened. I was working at a golf store at Austed's in Sioux Falls, South Dakota on a Monday, and nobody was buying a golf equipment. We just had like 50 people come in and watch all together, just cheering over everything. But Jeff, do you remember where you were for that Tiger-Rocco playoff?
Yeah, I was watching it at home. I don't remember exactly, but yeah, I was definitely, I think we had just moved. So I do remember like being in my new house and just watching it on the tele. But nothing like spectacular. Obviously, I wasn't in like a certain place and time, but yeah. I do remember watching. Definitely remember watching that in the playoff and stuff like that. So
Yeah, Max, you didn't remember anything. You don't.
Yeah, it was pre-DFS days, so like I had a full-time job back then.
Yeah,
so I'm sure I was at work, but I don't remember where exactly I was.
Amazing before. How much betting and like DFS makes you remember certain like so.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. The most historic U.S. Open that's ever been played, with multiple game win, multiple like clutch putts by Tiger, hobbling around on one knee. You know, the Rocco Media 18-hole playoff that truly went 18 holes. I mean, it was just an outrageous, outrageous day. Probably the most memorable non-gambling DFS day that I've had in golf, for sure. But as you said, we pay a lot more attention now. And I hope the PGA Tour continues to remember that. So keep updating your app and making it better. That's what I have to say about that. Let's kind of take a look around. So we've got 156-player field. For those who don't know, there's a lot of local qualifying where, you know, there's about 10,000 plus people who end up signing up to go play in their local qualifiers. They play 18 holes, then they advance to a sectional qualifier for 36 holes. So obviously you have all your exempt guys where you have the top 50 and you have a number of different ways. If you've won the US Open in the last 10 years, if you're a major winner, like there's a lot of ways of getting exemptions there, but there are a number of PGA Tour players, like top end PGA Tour players, we have to go through the sectional qualifying, which is 36 holes on a Monday, basically. And it's really, really tough to get through. We saw Ricky Fowler miss out by a shot. We're going to have some unfamiliar faces. We're going to have some familiar faces too, but you know, it's going to be a top 70 weekend. Unlike the Farmers Insurance though, the South Course is going to be the one that hosts all four rounds. So that'll be nice to be able to kind of stick to the data of one course. Don't have to look at that North Course that exists over there at all, that they play one round over there, but par 71, 7650, not necessarily bombers. I'm going to have you guys just kind of talk about it. Jeff, talk to me a little bit about how you're looking at which type of players you want at this golf course. And then also how you're kind of factoring in previous results at the Farmers Insurance to help you make decisions this week.
Yeah. I mean, look, the layout isn't going to be like super different or anything. I mean, I think the biggest change is just going to be, you know, faster greens, summer date, and probably just, you know, the traditional US Open rough. The fairways are already tough to hit here. They're low, you get really low driving accuracy standards. So it's just a obviously an event where you really just want to emphasize tee to green stats. Now you look at Torrey Pines, like it still plays as a bit of a classic kind of seaside course. We've seen guys like Brant Snedeker win, Patrick Reed, even Mark Leishman and Patrick Reed, they were like 50th in driving distance. So it does put a little bit of like just thought that, you know, you shouldn't be necessarily crossing off guys that don't have distance off the tee. I would just really say you got to be pretty confident if your guy doesn't have a ton of distance that he's going to really show up with the long irons and like around the greens, because it's still going to play long. The US Open is only going to heighten the course. And it's really not a week where you want to get too fancy in terms of just going off like, you know, bread and butter, which is guys who are just really strong off the tee here. And maybe not just distance, but strong some way off the tee. So,
yeah, all around driving for sure, I think is going to be a big component of what I'm doing. Max, talk to me a little bit about yourself. I know that you always do a great job on these Monday shows, breaking down specific, you know, fast greens. We're going to see fast greens this week, are we not?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, for me, like US Open and PGA Championship, people just like try to talk themselves into guys that don't hit it far. And I honestly just don't see any way that you can be confident a guy that's like not top 50 in the field, top 40 in the field in driving distance, especially this week. Like with the rough being up and the fairways being so small, everyone is going to miss. Like Answer is probably what, like number one in this field in accuracy, but you can't play the guy just because he's going to miss just as many fairways as everybody else. And he's going to have way further from the rough than a guy like, I don't know, like a knee knobber or like one of these guys that hits it really, really far. So for me, it's just driving distance. I don't really care about driving accuracy and approach game. Approach game is huge in this course. So that's something we can predict really well. Good irons, good off the tee. So ball striking all the way for me. And then putting, yeah, I definitely am going to take guys that are good on fast greens. I don't really care like how, like I actually like to use Fantasy National to look at guys inside 10 feet, because that's where most of the scoring that you're actually going to be able to predict is going to come from, plus all the par putts. So exactly. So guys that are inside 10 feet on fast greens, that's what I love to look at as far as predictive and putting.
Yeah. And majors, especially you're looking at those 10 footers being for par, and you've got to string them together for some of these guys to get to to get into contention, to get yourself into the mix, that's definitely going to be something I'm taking a look at too. I do think, I don't know, I want to talk myself into a couple of these guys outside of the top 50 and then have some short game, then have the ability to get up and down everywhere. Again, Patrick Reed, a decent enough driver of the golf ball, like no problem there. But, you know, these immaculate short games, I mean, these US Opens can get really, really nasty really, really quickly. You know, I haven't seen a weather forecast. It's a little bit too early for me to really consider too much there. But Jeff, anything there that you'd kind of disagree with or agree with regarding kind of his setup for this week?
No, I mean, I might not take it again. I mean, I might not take it as harsh as Max and just cross guys out necessarily, but I will try to be, you know, I don't want like four bunters on my team, guys who hit it like 290 off the tee. That'll just seem wrong. And so his point about the putting is super accurate. You know, Torrey Pines typically has highest three putt percentages on tour, inside 10 feet, tons of misses. So you really just, you should be putting a little bit of time and effort, guys who putt good on POA, putt good from within 10 feet, fast greens, that. I do feel like, I've always feel like, and Eric, you can speak to this maybe if I'm right or wrong, but I feel like the faster greens do favor the worst putters a little bit better because it evens out the field a little bit, but you know, you still don't want a guy who's so out of shape with the putter that, you know, he's probably not going to figure it out this week. So yeah, the green is definitely a factor this week.
So there's something that I'm going to speak to as somebody who's gone through some putting stuff. Again, I played golf in college and play a bunch of amateur tournaments. I've played in a couple USGA events myself, more mid-amateurs. That's kind of my jam. The 25 and up crew, you can still get into the Masters if you win one of those puppies. So we're still gearing up the game, trying to go that direction. But fast greens allow you to make shorter strokes. And so you don't have to make a longer stroke on a slower green. You're making long strokes. There's a lot that can go wrong in the course of that. On a faster green, I think it tends to benefit a lot of poor putters because the good putters don't see much of an advantage, as you were speaking to, because the breaks are more pronounced. It's harder to be exacting. But then also you're making shorter strokes. You don't have to make those longer motions. So I do think that all in all, like most people, it's kind of counterintuitive. You would think people would be worse putters on some of the faster greens. Now, that being said, we've seen a lot of strange things out of guys like Keegan Bradley and Emilio Grillo, where it kind of doesn't really matter where they're coming from. They're just not going to get the ball in the hole. And, you know, there's guys like that. And it's, you know, great because I always tend to bet those guys. So good for me. Let's take a look a little bit at the GPP strategy going into this week. So we have 150 max guys, like one Alex Baker. He's pretty good at this. He kind of has a number of ways that he goes about, it's kind of a solo way that he goes about this. And I think we've talked about this before. I know you guys talked about it a little bit on the PGA show that was kind of previewing that tournament, but kind of looking around 70 to 75 golfers. I think Jason Roslin does a lot of the same things. 35% is kind of your highest allocation for players, maybe like 40% if you're looking at the 20 max stuff. But is there kind of a way that you're going about building this week in kind of your larger field tournaments? Jeff, is that going to be something you're kind of looking at doing, maybe capping some guys, or are you going to maybe get to one or two guys for more than that?
Yeah. So yeah, I think for the US Open, it is a little bit more of an event. Like again, everyone's their own. Obviously, Alex has figured this out to a T. I'm definitely not as exacting as him in this. But for the U.S. Open, like it's one of those things where I feel like the field is cut down to the guys who can actually win the event, you know, and even among the elite players. I mean, we're talking about these guys, the shorter hitters. I don't really think they have that great a chance to win. So I think that you can, perhaps this is a good event where if you do want to cut your player pool down a little bit and just and you know, go a little bit higher on your highest allocations, that's something you could think about. You don't even really have to necessarily go higher on single players, just, you know, spread it out a little bit you know, thicker, so to speak, over a smaller group of players. So that's kind of one thing I always think about with the US Open, that I feel like this is an event where we know the type of player we want. We know the type of player who's probably going to win this, and you should use it to your advantage when you're creating lineups.
So contest selection, Max, that's kind of the thing I was going to ask you about too, because you were talking about, you know, playing some of the 5-5-5 showdown, looking at kind of how are you going about hand building? Because I believe, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, you go about hand building a number of like core lineups. You'll maybe do some of the 150 stuff, but how are you kind of breaking down if you're making like five main lineups? Will you go three of five of the same guy? Would you kind of be looking at maybe mixing and matching it a little bit differently?
Yeah. So for me, I actually try to go 4 or 5 or 3 or 5 on some main, some of my main guys, just so I have as much chance to win as I possibly can. So if like my core hits, I'll have like four or five guys that, you know, four or five lineups where I am, you know, within the striking distance come the weekend. And that's really all I look for. So if I whiff like I did last week, it's a whiff. And then I'll just play showdown and I'll try to make money that way. But I'm not going to like pick a million different golfers because you just can't beat the rake that way. And just hope that like one of these guys gets the six of six though. So yeah, I definitely try to narrow my lineups down to where I have four or five or three or five. I never really go 100% unless I'm like sure that this guy is super underpriced and he's going to be highly owned. And then I can just kind of go over the field on that particular guy. But yeah, if a guy's like
Chan Kim's at 6,100 and you can play 100% of him, you just do it.
Why not? Right. You just do it. Okay. When else can you do it? Yeah. So no, for those kind of types of guys, I definitely sprinkle them in. But like if a guy I love is 30%, like I want to bring up like DJ at the Masters, right? Like 2 years ago or during the COVID break, he was like 40% owned, but I'm like, I can't not play this guy with the way he's playing and him being like 9,500 or whatever. So I just played all of them, you know? So that's the type of thing I do if a guy's going to be chalky and I like him.
Yeah. And Jeff, you play a lot of single entry. We were talking about that a little bit before the show too. How do you go about taking a look at like where you want to be targeting certain golfers? Are you going to play like one big lineup where you're going to be playing multiple single entry contests in it? You're going to kind of spread it around a little bit and just kind of speaking to the strategy that Max is using too.
Yeah. Same thing for three Max and single entry. I think Max and I think about it a lot similar. I mean, three to five kind of core lineups. Take your guys. And if you really want to go overweight on someone, again, you're probably not going to do it with like you said, a Chan Kim or someone like that. But if there's a really popular value play, you feel strongly about that, there's no chance you're fading. You should definitely look at those lineups as a chance to just put them in all of them and go overweight the field, because that's how you'll get more opportunity to hit the top, like Max said. So pretty similar to what Max is feeling on those. I will take chances from time to time on like a lower owned player at like a 5%, or if I really feel strongly about it. I don't know if that's going to be this week just because it's the US Open. And probably, like I said before, I don't want to get too crazy, but very similar to what Max was throwing out.
Oh, I want to get crazy. I want to get weird. I am here to get down.
It's
I'm here to
Monday,
get down.
Man. I mean, like Wednesday, I'll start throwing the guys in, but I mean, yeah. Monday,
okay,
I'll
yeah. All of a sudden you go from having zero exposure to anybody under 7K to having like, here are 15 dudes to pick between. We'll shuffle between them. I love it. I'm absolutely here for that. Also, what you should be here for is the free content. Did you guys like that segue? I liked it personally.
Beautiful. But,
and thank you so much. I'm a professional. So get access to all of the great Osmo Plus tools that we have for all of the golf stuff that we have as well. $29.95 for a weekly pass to Osmo Plus. That includes premium content and tools on Osmo, including player projections, ownership projections, our premium Slack channel, which you have to be checking out, and especially for the sports betting side of it. I mean, my gosh, the stuff that Ben Ross has been doing in the horse betting world has kind of changed my life. I'm enjoying that very much. It's also ruining it, but that's a different story. So sign up for all of those goodies. Get that PGA weekly package. It's all good stuff. And today only, we've got free premium tools and data, player projections for NBA, player projections for MLB. That's good stuff. So check that out. Check out all our shows coming up on the YouTube channel, on the YouTube Osmo channel, Osmo YouTube channel. There we go. We found it. Now we're going to move ourselves on to the betting portion of the program, which I'm extremely excited about because I absolutely love, I feel like I'm kind of like being able to drop in on your Monday conversation that you guys always have with Jason, and you guys are firing off a bunch of stuff. So I'm going to kind of drop this down. So I started with golf betting. This is like my avenue to DFS, my avenue to everything was around 2013, 2014. I started being like, well, I know a lot of these guys coming out of Southern California, whether it's Patrick Cantlay, I've played with them when they were young, and you just wanted to be ahead of the curve. I was like, there's an edge to be had being able to play with a guy like Bo Hosser. That hasn't worked out, but that's a different story too. But I play with all these elite Southern California amateur guys in amateur tournaments down here. And I'm like, I kind of know who the up and coming guys are. Sahith Theegala, hopefully he can start putting some stuff together, because you can kind of see this is where the best players come out of. I might as well take that knowledge and utilize it. But I thought I'd just open this up to you guys first. We'll start with Max here. For DFS exposures, we talked a lot about that. How do you go about filling out a betting card for any given week, or specifically for a major like this week, to kind of have along with your DFS exposure?
And so like, it depends on what the chalk is. Like couple of weeks ago, I absolutely did not want to play Cantlay in DFS the week that he won with the Rahm withdrawal. So because I thought he was going to be overowned at his price. So those are, if I think it's a good course fit and the guy's playing well and I'm just fading him as chalk, I'm going to bet. Just so I have some sort of an avenue to be made to making money in that particular case. And it's also guys that I think that are underpriced in betting. So if it's a long shot that I like, that I think should be priced at better odds, I'll bet him. I usually don't bet too many guys with short odds just because I feel like DFS is going to cover that part for me just because I'm going to be end up playing them in DFS. So usually I end up with a bunch of long shot guys, you know, like 50-1 and higher. And maybe if I love a guy at like shorter odds, I'll bet him. But usually that's the type of betting card I fill out.
Love it. Yeah. And I mean, Jeff, I've been watching you do this with Mayo and with all these other guys for years and years and years. And you've always given great advice on how to go about putting together a card for a given week. And does anything kind of stick out for you this week? Anything you do differently for a major as well?
Well, I mean, I appreciate that, even though it's probably not true half the time. But
see, that wasn't sarcasm. Unlike Max over there, he just wants to let you know you didn't bet Higo. Okay, so we're better now.
Just a fact. Yeah, I usually start off my weeks. I mean, I definitely start off my week, you know, just getting bets in and trying to flush out who I think is like the best value on the board. I mean, I think any given week, like one of the reasons why I really like golf outright is that it's a big field and there's generally some mistakes out there. Now you have to have certain ways to take advantage of it. Either it's like a top 10 or an each way or an outright. But I'm all about it. And I mean, just, you know, embracing obviously the variance that is outright betting is one thing, but I think that's how I start my week. And you know, it's a little bit different in majors because I feel at the top of the board, you're not going to get as many opportunities, but with the US Open, I don't mind. This is like the one event where I definitely don't mind putting a couple players at the top of my board. If people follow me, they probably know I'm more of a player who will go for, you know, I don't have a problem like just putting like, you know, plus 5,000 and over on my card for the week and going with long shots and using each ways and top tens. But for the US Open, you know, it really feels like, again, we have a smaller group of guys who can actually win this week. And I want a little bit of exposure to them in one way or another. So that's how I'm going to be starting, you know, targeting at least two players, probably under plus 3,000 this week, most likely. Well, I mean, a couple of them I already have. And you know, I'll take a couple long shots, but this is really more of a week where I feel like you're going to get really good odds in the placing, like the top 20. I've always done well at the US Open with those. Guys are just a little bit underrated coming in. You know, these players we'll talk about, they don't have shots to win, but you know, very specific golf course. They have some kind of advantage. They're playing well maybe, but I go a little bit heavier on the placings here. And again, we'll dive like kind of more to the top of board on the outright.
Yeah. I think Max also, just kind of like looking around, what we're kind of doing for this week. So you're talking about bombers. Would you possibly, and this is something Ben talks and a lot on the Wednesday show, but kind of grouping skill set in case the course plays differently than we might think it will. Do you do that kind of for your lineups? Do you ever factor that in? And then also on your betting card as well, where you have exposure to that grouping of players.
Yeah. I mean, Ben and I talked about this, I think like 3 or 4 years ago when we first met. And we were kind of grouping guys based on how we thought the course would play, based on weather for sure. When there's weather edges, we would group guys in the same group if we liked a bunch of guys. Because usually, like, there'll be groups where they kind of pair guys based on their skill level and based on their watchability. So, like, you know, they'll put three really good players together and you can group them for weather edges or whatever. But this week, I think I'm just playing all bombers. So, like, all of my lineups are going to have a bunch of bombers in them. Just because looking at the data here, this course just plays so well with driving distance. It's such a big edge out of really any other trait. So, for me, I'm just going to play a bunch of bombers and hopefully it works out.
You know who leads the field in driving distance?
Wilco?
Yes. How did you know that right off the top of your head?
Because he hits it like 380.
He does. That was honestly the most impressive thing you've ever done. That was fantastic.
You. I appreciate it.
Jeff, did you know that one? I bet you did.
No, I actually did. And I think it's because he's been getting like, is it Callaway or someone's been tweeting about Wilco and how far he hits it. And I had like three tweets flash. I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot this guy hits it like a mile. And then I started reading it. And I'm like, wow, he hits it like as far as Bryson. So
yeah.
I think, you know, I think it was Bryson liked the tweet or something, and it like showed up on my something like that. So that's how I got my Wilco information.
It's not just that he hits it further than Bryson. It's that he hits it over 10 yards further than Bryson.
Yeah.
On average. It's the dumbest thing I've ever seen. I don't really even know how to like quantify it, because if people don't know, driving distance, they basically take into account a number of holes where people are presumed to hit driver off of the tee. Sometimes people hit three woods, it can skew the data a little bit, but this dude is rocking it absolutely every time out. And he's not like the most, I mean, he's got driving accuracy under 50%. So yeah, I mean, there's that, but that should be very, very fun to watch this week. 7,700. Let's sign up for that over on FanDuel specifically. I might be taking some 6,900 over on DK. No thanks. But anywho, let's kind of get ourselves into a couple of the picks that we have this week. Looking at the top end, John Rahm is your betting favorite, 10-1, coming off of a Memorial tournament, which, my God, I don't even know if we can talk about it. I don't want to jinx it, but John Rahm going to be in the field. Presume we're ready to rock with him. Who's feeling great about John Rahm this week? Anybody?
Anyone?
Max? Yeah, that's the sound I was looking for.
His odds are so short. Like,
I know, 10-1 is nuts.
Can you tell me why he's like twice as likely to win than, I don't know, like, well, you know, the next, like DJ and Bryson?
Well, he just won by 5 strokes after 3 rounds, man. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, I
think
these COVID.
Are justified. If I think they're justified. I mean, he dusted.
I think so too.
He dusted a really good field. You know, Cantlay was playing good, and he couldn't even get within 5 shots. Or I don't know. That was the most elite golf we've seen this year, for being honest. So I know it was 3 rounds, and I know he's had a break, but like, you add in the Torrey factor. I mean, I made a case last week, like if he was got around plus 1200, plus 1400, I was probably going to bet him. I'm probably not going to at this price, but I really feel like this is very much a DJ going into the Masters situation. So I don't know. I think these odds are justified. I don't know if you could expect much bigger than this.
Yeah, 7.4 strokes gained tee to green at the PGA. Looking back at the Farmers, he finished 7th there earlier this year. He was on that little mini run where he went Zozo, Masters, TOC, Farmers. He had all of those from the fall season coming into the spring. And at the Farmers, 4.9 strokes gained tee to green. Was basically flat around the green, but like, we don't even have those numbers because he didn't finish the golf tournament last time out here. So it didn't update. So I don't really know how to gauge it, but I know he murdered people. I know that he absolutely went out and torched the Memorial Field. So I got to say it's 10-1. You're probably not going to be betting him. We'll get to the DFS angle of it too. But I mean, John Rahm is obviously playing very, very well. And I think he's probably going to have a little something like ready to go. He'll have a little extra fuel, I think, this week for sure. But now let's talk about the 14-1 guys, because this is really where it gets interesting. We could just basically list off all the dudes that are coming in around that number. Depending on your books, make sure you're shopping your odds. But right now it looks as though JT, Dustin Johnson, Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, Bryson DeChambeau, Brooks Koepka. I think I got everybody there that's kind of in that 14-15-1 range. Jeff, do you have a lean on somebody that you might add to your betting card? Are you even looking this range, or are you going to look a little longer?
I'll most likely be looking longer. I think Bryson is the most appealing of those guys you just listed off. Bryson at 1500, like plus 1500, just feels like you could just bet him every year at the US Open. You're probably going to come out as a profitable bettor.
Yeah.
He's basically molded his game for the US Open, right? So, I think there's enough there with like the lack of West Coast success. And I don't know, his lead up's been fun. Okay, I guess. You know, he looked okay at the Memorial. I think that was a strong start. So, it's fine if you want to take him. I just feel like there's too many other players in the plus above him and above plus 2,000 that I'd rather take than go shorter. So
Max, I think there's got to be a 0% chance you don't have Bryson on your card if we're going to be talking bombers. And if we're going to be having bombers, I know 14-1 isn't very, that's not a great number to be getting on just about anybody here when there's a number of guys longer, I think, with much better odds there. But is Bryson a part of your card this week?
Yeah, I like Bryson. But I mean, like the first guy, I think, I'm really honest, JT. The guy's just been playing so good, tee to green, and his odds are like 23.
Well, he's putting like an idiot, so that's the problem.
But like,
and I love him.
So variable. You know, like if he gets hot with a putter, he's just going to smash this field because he's playing better tee to green than pretty much anybody, I guess, except for Rahm and his last tournament. But yeah, I mean, JT's putter is holding him back, but he's second tee to green in this field. And he's what, like 8th or 10th as far as odds go? So for me, that's the bet that I would make. So yeah, for me, I think JT is the most is my favorite guy up there.
Finished 42nd at the Memorial, 9.5 shots gained tee to green, minus 8.5 strokes putting. Is that good? I don't think that's good. Oh, let's kind of look a little bit longer here. Jeff, let's just jump to the next range. Intrigue me. What? Who's the first guy? Who's got the shortest odds out of everybody on your card this week so far?
Yeah, so it'll be Cantlay, plus 2,200. I hear what Max is saying. I mean, like, Justin Thomas is heading into, like, auto bet territory.
Yeah.
Like, just because of how big his odds are. I can't see Justin Thomas sinking enough putts at Torrey Pines. Like, you want him to, he's going to have to sink, like, you know, 20, 10 footers.
Yep.
It's not going to happen. I just don't see it happening.
I mean, he was like 18-1 at the TP at Sawgrass. That was the last time I pulled the trigger on him. Yeah. I couldn't believe that number existed. I think everybody in the world hit him on that week. Yeah. But, you know, 14-1 is starting to look better. I got to say that makes me at least happy. But talk to me about Cantlay. What's kind of intriguing you there? Because we're starting to see some better form.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Right. Yes. I mean, and Cantlay's a guy who just, you know, when he gets a little bit confidence on the greens, I mean, that can go a long way. You know, his best finish in the US Open was at Pebble on Poa Greens, the West Coast guy. So that's all good. But realistically, he's just hitting, he's destroying the ball right now. I mean, he's, you know, ball striking, it's all ball striking. And, the around the green game is just as good as like a guy like Justin Thomas right now. So all things considered, like coming off the win, I mean, it's a lot to ask a guy to win twice, but we saw Martin Keimer did it in 2014. I like the spot for Cantlay a lot. I think people might actually be underrating him just because he doesn't have a ton of like Torrey success, but I'll lean him slightly over Justin Thomas. I can see Cantlay. I can at least picture Cantlay in my mind having a good putting week and sinking enough putts here. And tee to green, I think he's right there with Thomas right now. So he's the shortest guy for me right now.
How about yourself, Max, other than Bryson, who's next up?
So JT, and then it's Hovland for me. I just feel like eventually this guy is going to break through. He definitely has like the mentality to win a major, I think. So I'm not worried about that. His ball striking is, I think the top three guys in ball striking right now are like JT, Cantlay, and then Hovland. Mm-hmm. He's third in ball striking in my model. Approach game is on fire. He hits it far enough. He struggles with a putter, but he's gained strokes putting in 4 out of the last 5. Like at Memorial, he lost a bunch of strokes, but that was kind of a weird, like around the green putting week for a lot of guys. So I'm not that worried about that. So I think this is a course that he can definitely compete in. He can win at, and he's another guy at like 23, 24, 25 to 1. I think you can grab.
Yeah. I love that as well. Any interest? Can I interest anybody at a 50-1 Phil bet? A guy who has a lot of love-hate relationship with this course. He's over 100-1. Yes, you're laughing. I mean, is this the dumbest question I've ever asked? Probably, but I'm going to ask it. 50-1. Somebody's going to want to pull the trigger on that. The guy just won the PGA. You know, he hasn't gone back to playing senior tour events, so he's just hanging out, getting ready to rock this week. It's a backyard game for him. Any interest at 50-1 to put a dart on him? Jeff.
Dude, I wouldn't bet Phil at 500-1 this week. I mean, I'll let everyone's dads do that.
I would bet him at 500-1.
It's such a fish bet, right? Like
it is such a fish bet.
The fishiest bet.
I mean,
somebody's betting it. If it's 50-1, no, somebody's betting it.
There's tons of people betting it. Fish are betting.
There is tons of people betting it. There will be tons of people betting it. There was people betting Phil at the PGA Championship because there's people who come in and just. Oh, it's Phil Mickelson. Let's throw some money down. And that'll be the same type of people who they don't care if he's 50-1 or 200-1. Like they'll just bet Phil. I mean, it's ridiculous. US Open, 50 years old. I mean, if it happens, I'll cheer for it. I was happy for Phil at the PGA. I did not feel any remorse or FOMO, and I feel far, far less here as well. So
yeah, it helps when the guy's 1% owned in DFS. It doesn't like completely drive the stake through your heart the same way. I think that helps. Max, yeah, I'm assuming you feel the exact same way.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at his strokes gain numbers and he gained 12.9 strokes tee to green at the PGA. The last time he gained that many strokes was 2017. So it's going to be another 3 years and another 3 years, he'll get another 12 strokes. And that's what I'll play him.
54-year-old Phil just lapping fields. That'll be great. So I've got a guy at 150-1 that I'm going to be betting for sure. All around the industry here. I think Alex Noren is a guy that has shown some flashes of form here of late. Going to just kind of keep the ball and play here a little bit. I did have a buddy who brought up an interesting thing about Torrey. I've never actually gotten a chance to go down and play there. I live in Los Angeles. It's very strange that I haven't gone down there because it'd be super easy. I think one Jordan Klein might make a drive down there sometime with me. We can go play a little golf here. Producer Jordan behind the glass. Thank you. But my buddy played the Cal-Am last year in the middle of COVID when everything was going down. And he was saying that he hadn't been down there for like 4 or 5 years. He's from the Southern Cal area. Very, very good player. Ended up making match play there. But he said not hitting the ball left is a big advantage on this golf course. And I don't know if that's something that shows up because Patrick Riga obviously hits a big slinging draw. These are professional golfers that hit it both ways. These are the best players in the world who can work the ball both ways. But I don't know if that's something that necessarily is going to show up this week. I've got to dig a little bit further into it. That was simply a conversation on the phone yesterday when we were talking about him playing at Torrey Pines in tournament conditions. And it's going to obviously be set up a lot tougher, but they did play it at 7,600 there as well. So I don't know if that's something to be looking at, but Alex Noren does not miss the ball left. I can tell you that he is a tactician. He will get the ball in play. I think he's a guy that I might want to be looking at. So anybody that's on longer odds there, Jeff, I'll go to you here as Max double checks everything that I'm saying here.
Is Noren in the field?
I don't think he's in the field, dude.
He's not in the field. I just saw 45. I saw 150-1 on him.
Oh, really?
Honestly, that was the most embarrassing moment of my entire life.
I'm not even making fun of you. I don't know. So I don't.
I saw 150-1 on a book. I literally am looking at a book that says 150-1 on him. 2001 odds.
He's not on DraftKings, right?
He's not on DraftKings. Yeah, I am the worst. I just literally targeted him. I see his odds on a book. I can't say the book, but I will tell you afterwards. I will send them an email.
I'm just trying to remember. Like,
he's not in the
top 60, so he wouldn't have qualified, yeah. Right?
Nope. He would have had to get through. He did not get through. That is a fact.
Pretty on the ball. So,
all right. Abraham answer 60-1. Save me. Save me, Abraham answer from myself. I'm very excited about that. I don't really see anybody like crazy long. Maybe Sebastian. Well, I'm now going to double check this book. Yeah, Sebastian Munoz is in the field. So 125-1. Sign me up for a little bit of ball striking. But anybody at longer odds intrigue you, Jeff? Safe.
All right. I'm going to totally save you. Max Homa.
Yes.
Let's go.
Great classic golfer. He's got some distance off the tee. He can be very hot or cold around the greens and with the putter, but like we saw him at Riviera, he's got the nerve like to sink those putts when he gets on there. I just like his attitude too. I mean, yeah. Seeing him talk after the Riviera, like that basically just made me a Max Homa fan. I think you will see him. I think he has the ability to compete, like legitimately. I'm not going to say necessarily like he's going to win, but I think you will see him in some majors eventually compete, and it'll be at these kind of golf courses like a US Open or a PGA. So he's played well. He played well his last time out. I think that he's a player. He's not going to get scared if he's in there with these elite players. He has that mentality. I'm very excited to play Max Homa in DFS, and I don't think he's a bad bet if you are going plus 100. Again, you don't want to be sprinkling too much here. It's the US Open, but Homa is a guy, I think if he's there Sunday, he has the nerve to sink those putts. So I really like that bet this week.
Yeah, we saw him win earlier this year in Riv. Definitely a spot to be looking at Southern California guys, and I'm fine doing that, grouping them together. Max, how about your guy?
So you were talking about drive left of void, right? Those are the guys that we want to target. Let's just go down this rabbit hole just for fun.
I'm here for it.
Who's number one? Who's number one?
I mean, number one DJ.
No, does not drive left of void.
It's got answer. Be close.
It's answer. The guy you brought up.
I'm so in love. I'm so in love. Man, I love this rabbit hole.
I think that's hilarious. Here. And Hovland is top 10.
Yeah, Hovland's definitely a guy who doesn't miss a left. And that's why I was bringing that up to regard to your bet as well. But a number of these holes, I mean, you're sitting Oceanside for a couple of these longer par fours, and there's just trouble left absolutely everywhere on a lot of those longer 480, 490 holes for those par fours. And that's kind of what he was talking to, where he's like, I can kind of get away with it if I'm playing a shorter par four, but you cannot get away with it on that back nine hitting it left.
I love it. That's what we're going to do. We're going to target all the left avoid guys. Mm-hmm. If we're going longer odds for me, I think guys like Charlie Hoffman are the ones I'm going to like stick with, just because the guy's playing so well and his ball striking is second in this field. And he, what kind of odds can we get for him? Like Hoffman, I see him at 80. 80-ish, right? Like, you can probably get him a little bit longer on some.
I'm going to click out of Shmo Shmada, and you guys can find the odds now, because Shmo Shmada does not, they're screwing with me this morning.
Yeah, so I see 80-1 in Hoffman. So that's going to be a bet that I'm definitely making. Eventually, this guy's going to put it all together. And so far, he's putting on like 3 winning rounds, but not 4. So once he gets to 4, he's going to win a tournament. So I love Charlie Hoffman.
All right. Well, Jeff wins because he said Max Homa, and that makes me happy. So we're gonna be clicking Max Homa's name a lot on all of the sites. Another thing that you should be doing, if you're over on the Twitter sphere, make sure that you're hitting up the Osmo Hall of Fame. So we have the Osmo Avatar. If you guys want to get 1 free month of Osmo Plus Platinum, finish top 3 of any contest with over 5K contestants. And then we'll also flash you up on the screen of all of our lovely wins. Tweet the wins to at Osmo HOF on Twitter. That gives you an opportunity to get that free month. You can get that free month whenever you want, once per calendar year. Super easy way to kind of get your foot in the door, see kind of what we have behind the paywall. We're going to have so many things for the US Open. We have our pro plays, being able to look at what our exposures are on Fantasy Cruncher, firing them up there. How about that? 13.75. I mean, just some massive, massive wins here in NBA here of late. A showdown contest for NBA have just been fire here lately. We have some of the best guys in-house here. I just got done with my bachelor party. Had one Rin Pak out in South Dakota with me, out in Deadwood, kicking it in the world. It was fantastic. We were able to talk all things showdown. He's pretty good at it. He got a live seat here over on FanDuel. He didn't post it. It makes me sad. But everybody else here posting, Big Gil, 37. We had a bunch of wins. Everything was fantastic. But looking forward to seeing you guys on that Osmo Hall of Fame, hopefully for the PGA this week. For the US Open. Taking a look at the DFS preview, let's get ourselves into the goodies here. John Rahm, top of the board. We talked about him. Shortest odds on the board, 10-1. Then we get into that whole grouping of those 14, 15-1 guys. Jordan Spieth, I'm assuming all the ownership is going to be pretty darn flat across these 10K guys. Yeah. Is there anybody other than maybe Bryson and John Rahm being kind of the guys, if we're speaking to the bomber narrative? Dustin Johnson, you probably don't have a ton of good vibes, you know, considering he should have been there at the end of last week. But going to DJ probably as well there. But I mean, everybody's going to get pretty similar ownership. Is there anybody you think ends up chalk max out of this 10K range?
I don't know. I think the 10Ks are going to be pretty flat, like you said. I think a lot of guys are going to gravitate to the 9Ks just because that happens every major. Nobody wants to play like a 6K guy and take a guess on them because nobody really knows these guys. So people end up making a lot of these really flat lineups. So I think guys like Xander with the San Diego narrative and playing well, guys like Cantlay, guys like Hovland are going to end up being the chalk. So I think you're going to get the 10K guys pretty under-owned. I usually like to see like who's the highest priced guy, because that's the guy that comes in at like 12%. And it happens to be John Rahm this week, who everybody should love just because he's playing so well. So I think if I'm making out lineups right now without like seeing ownerships, I'm going to have the most of John Rahm here, I think.
Jeff, kind of where are you looking at in this top end? Is there somebody that really sticks out to you? For me, it comes up once we get underneath 10K, where there's some astonishing prices, kind of historically on a couple players. But kind of who in that 10K range looks great to you?
It does feel like everyone is probably... Again, I don't think John Rahm is going to be like uber chalk, but I do feel like he'll probably get the most ownership of the top 5 players. People will just say, well, I mean, you know, I think, well, it could be Bryson. It's either going to be Bryson or Rahm. I definitely feel like those two will stick out, possibly even just have similar ownership. I think you may even give the edge to Bryson. I think enough people will talk themselves into it just because of the savings. So if I had to say right now, like the play I want to get up to is Rahm, and definitely, you know, if I was doing, you know, like 150 lineups or something, that's the guy I would want to be overweight on. I think you'll get really low ownership or semi-low ownership on DJ and Brooks. I think you might get a scenario where later in the week, those guys pop with a little bit more ownership than we think, because it is a little bit harder to pay up for Rahm. You need to have confidence in guys down there. And I don't think that many people will want to do that. So Bryson, you know, sticks out as probably the guy most people gravitate towards, but yeah, Rahm is kind of the only guy I really feel like I want to get up to. And I think you'll probably get decent enough ownership on him.
And left avoidance. I don't know what his number is, but I know he hits a cut. So we're just going to keep riding.
Yeah, he's like top 20.
Perfect. Yeah, that's fantastic. Great. This is maybe the worst narrative. It's probably just a lie at this point in time. But I don't know. He's a good enough player who hits a cut, and he's like, I feel good about it. So there we are. Rory McIlroy, 9,900. That's jarring to see. Justin Thomas, 9,700. That's jarring to see. And I don't think either one of them are going to get as much ownership as what Morikawa, Xander Schauffele, Victor Hovland for sure is going to be super popular. Patrick Cantlay. I mean, that whole bottom 9K range is just going to be jammed into so many lineups. There's got to be some reasoning to be going up to JT. I think I'm going to be trying to do that at the lowest owned out of everybody there. But I mean, this 9K range is just ridiculous, Max. Kind of who are you looking at?
Yeah, I think Morikawa is going to end up being the chalk. Just like he's number one in ball striking in this field in the last 2 months. So, I mean, his putter can always implode. So that's the type of guy that, and he doesn't hit it far. So my narrative of hitting it far maybe isn't as good for a guy like Colin Morikawa, although he's so good with his long irons. Maybe it doesn't even matter. But if he's going to be the chalk, I'm definitely going to play more of the JTs. I think Xander will end up being chalk just because he's been chalk the last two tournaments. He hasn't really killed anyone. And there's a whole South California narrative with him. I don't know if he can win. Like, we've talked about this before, where the guy just has real trouble closing out tournaments, and it's become kind of a thing, like a Tony Finau thing with him. So I don't know if he can win, but at 9,300, you don't need him to win. So I think people will end up playing Cam. I think people will stay away from Cantlay because nobody really plays these guys on back-to-back wins. So I think that narrative is going to go against him. I'm going to play a bunch of Cantlay, and I think everybody's going to play Finau. At 8,900, that's just way too cheap for him. So I think the chalk is going to be Xander and Morikawa. So I'm going to kind of go a little bit above and a little bit below them.
Jeff, you can answer to the 9K range as well. But then just kind of looking up this upper eights as well. I mean, Will Zalatoris, 8,600. Yeah, as mm-hmm. you said, Finau, 8,900 for sure. Going to be getting a lot of ownership. Absolute bomber. Kind of looking around this entire section. I mean, there's so many good options to make a balanced lineup this week.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have a lot of Morikawa, Schauffele, like Hovland lineups, yeah. or throw in Cantlay, maybe throw in Finau. Like that, you're just going to have a million lineups like that. And I don't even know if it's the wrong strategy. It's just there's going to be a lot. I think Max's breakdown of how the ownership might work out is definitely spot on. I think Morikawa, Schauffele will be the people like people just feel comfortable with. Morikawa sometimes can just like people just forget about him, but I don't think that's going to happen this week. He's objectively, I think people finally kind of realize how good this guy is, and he's like cheaper than Rory now by a few hundred bucks still. I think Finau at 8,900, people are just going to have trouble laying that off. Again, it's like the pricing thing. It's like $100 less than 9,000. Mm-hmm. So people will gravitate to him more than Cantlay. Hideki, definitely interesting as like a pivot. Yeah. No one will play Hideki here because it's, you know, I don't know. He's never won on the West Coast, or someone will come up with some narrative, right? So I think the 8K range, there's going to be more chances for like, you know, lower owned pivots, but like don't expect anything crazy low on any of these guys. Maybe Patrick Reed, which sounds even crazy to say considering he won here like 5 months ago, but you know, Reed might be the guy who ends up with like, you know, maybe even single digits just because of who he's around. So
yeah. I'm curious, that is the guy at 9K, because it seems like you're getting a little, I don't want to say higher quality, because Patrick Reed's won multiple times on the PGA Tour. He has, you know, two Masters. There's really nothing you can say negative about his pedigree, but you know, I feel like you're getting Cantlay for 100 more, 100 less for Finau. Yeah, that entire range just becomes kind of like blocked away from Reed. But I don't know, maybe he starts getting some steam as the week goes along. It's hard to know really this far out, but kind of looking further down as we're getting here. The one thing that makes me very, very sad is it looks like Louis Oosthuizen might have a shot to be one of the highest owned golfers in the entire field coming off of a PGA where he played just fantastic. He's 8,100. I mean, if he's not going to be popular, just give me all of it in the entire world. But, you know, that's three straight top 20s now. It's just hitting the ball like an absolute ace. Best putter on the planet, basically, over the course of the last 50 rounds. What do you think about my guy, Louis, Max?
Yeah, I mean, if he's chalk, it's going to be – I'm going to have to pivot somewhere. But, like, Louis is so good at these majors. Like, when he gets up for a golf tournament, he usually does really well if he doesn't withdraw. So it's all good with Louis. Like, his ball striking numbers look good. He hits it far enough. like you said, he's number one in putting in the last, what, like 6 months or something.
Yeah.
I mean, the guys around him are interesting. Connors is just like the best ball striker in the field, probably. Doesn't hit it very far, doesn't miss many fairways, and had a really good putting stretch for like 3 or 4 weeks when he was mega chalk. Then people started getting off of him when he started putting poorly. I think that's the type of guy I'm going to want to target. But Tyrrell Hatton is really the guy I think I'm most interested in here. He was so good tee to green at Palmetto. And it just kind of was amazing to watch. He didn't hit any putts, basically. But what he was saying was that he got married. So this was like his first time playing in like 2 weeks. He barely practiced. Now he's coming to a major where, you know, he just showed, himself that he's striking the ball really well. So I think that's the guy I'm going to gravitate to at 8,300 here.
Yeah. When's the last time you saw a guy lose 3 strokes putting and finish second in this case? I mean, that's a pretty staggering deal. I mean, obviously striped it and there you go. Definitely a good spot to go to. Jeff, let's talk a little bit about this upper 7K range, another spot where similar to that 9K range, it's just going to be jammed with a bunch of intriguing options. We have Paul Casey, we have Abraham Answer, we have Matthew Fitzpatrick, Tommy Fleetwood, probably going to be a pass for me. I think probably a pass for most people. 35th at Congaree, that's his best. No, I guess the PGA missed the cut. Wells Fargo, he showed up 1 week, but it's been pretty brutal of late for him. I don't know if a bunch of ownership will be going there whatsoever, but Sam Burns does intrigue me at 7,700 coming off of a 1-2 back-to-back here. I think he's probably going to be under 10%. That kind of seems to be a guy I want to go to a lot, but as you said, Abraham Answer, I'm just going to play a ton of. Who do you really like at the upper 7Ks, Jeff?
Yeah, no, I think Answer is a good call this week. I really do. I mean, I know we got the distance narrative, but this is a guy who's really proven himself on longer golf courses. I hope the distance narrative keeps his ownership down because I love Answer, and I think he can definitely grind. He's a player if he gets hot on the greens. He'll just hang around. So for a DFS play, yeah. I mean, look, I hope people keep playing Tommy Fleetwood. Keep playing him. Like, he's not playing good. He's pay the rake, whatever, you know, say. I think Sam Burns is absolutely like a good pivot there. He's got the distance. We've seen this guy just absolutely light it up with the best in the world. He almost won at Riviera on the West Coast earlier, actually almost won at the Safeway Open too. So this part of the world has actually been pretty good to Sam Burns. I think that's a really good pivot there. I think Shane Lowry should get some, I think Lowry is finally to the point where he's going to be chalky like Louis. I mean, yeah. Look, I love both these guys. I rode them both to a nice PGA Championship week, but it's probably going to break my heart. I mean, like they're going to be, like you said, Eric, they're going to be really chalky this week and for good reason. So I might still play Lowry. He's just so cheap that I might just do that. But I think Kokrak is a decent enough pivot there. I don't know what his ownership is going to be. I don't know if people are going to be in on Jason Kokrak at a US Open or not. If they're not, I don't mind that at all. He's playing really well, putting well, but I like the Burns call a lot. And I hope Answer, even just like 10% on Answer, like that's fine. You know, I'll play him. I think he's playing really well right now. And like I said, he's shown enough that he can handle these long golf courses. So,
yeah, I love Lowry. I love Kokrak. I think both I would expect to have over 10% ownership. I'm closer to 15-20%, I would say, more than likely in like the Millie Maker or, you know, both iterations of the Millie Maker for sure. It just seems like two guys who haven't really treated people poorly by playing them off late for sure. Got to feel pretty good about that. Can I talk anybody into playing Sung JM, who's just been absolutely garbage? Max, do you have any desire for him? And then anybody else down here? I mean, we have Joaquin Niemann. We have Brian Harman, who, you know, is going to be absolutely not in your pool, as we've talked about this going forward. But Mark Leishman, former winner here as well. Immaculate short game. Anybody else down here at the lower sevens that intrigues you?
I like Gary Woodland. Gained strokes on approach in 4 straight. And second in the field and driving distance. You wouldn't think that like the skinny version of Gary Woodland is hitting it that far, but he is. Also has a good history at this particular venue. So yeah, for Gary, I kind of look at his approach and putting numbers. And when those are trending up, that's when I like to play this guy. And I'm seeing both of those things happening now. So yeah
California Coastal winner, the US Open, Pebble Beach, different setup, different golf course in a lot of ways, but similar in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And like gained 6 strokes in approach at the PGA, only finished 38th because his driving wasn't so good, but then 14th in the Schwab, gained on approach and putting. Missed the cut of the Memorial. I mean, it's Gary Woodland. He's going to have weeks like that. But at 7,500, I think he's going to come in under 10%. I think he's going to be around 5% with all these chalky numbers. I love the Burns call. I'm going to play a bunch of Burns. I think Kakrick is going to be chalk. He just has been. His stats look so good. He's doing everything well. He won. Like, yeah, I think Kokrek is going to end up being chalky. I love Shane Lowry as well. And as we go down here, I'm not really on any of these guys. They kind of have flaws in all of these. But what do you guys think about Bubba at 7,400? No one's going to play him.
I'll let Jeff go because that's a no from me, dog. I can't do it. Can't do it.
Oh, I can always be talking to Bubba. Winner at Farmers, smokes it off the tee.
The leader at Farmers. I love that.
No. Winner.
Winner. Sorry. I thought you said leader, and I was like, oh, the led around goody. Oh, no.
Wait, this was fun. I don't even know. He was like 20 right. or something when he won. So, I mean, it's really neat. But he's got the distance, right? A good week off the tee for Bubba. You never know what can happen. I really don't hate it in this range. I mean, I'd probably rather play him than like Harmon or Sergio. It's taking your life. It's like a T9 or like a T4 144 or something, right? Like it's probably way more likely that it's the other way. But I don't hate it. I'm just gonna play Max Homa though. Like I said, I just like that play too much. I don't think there's anyone else in here that really gonna lead me off it. And I don't think you have to worry about ownership at all with Homa because again, people just like he doesn't have a major championship record yet. Harris English is a guy I'll throw out. I mean, he's such a good POA putter that, you know, he'll probably take a couple doubles because of his off the tee. He's just garbage off the tee, but like he will grind in there and people forget like he's top five at the US Open last year. So he is playing better, even though with the Sunday self-destruction from last week, I wouldn't underrate him at all. Wouldn't be shocked if he just grinds his way to like a T20. So I don't hate that at this range. Maybe, I don't know, maybe like more of a cash game play or something, but
yeah.
I like Homa too much, really, to speak too highly on anyone else in that range.
Let's get weird, gentlemen. Under 7K. I have one guy that I just want to be the first person to just throw into the atmosphere. I don't know what his ownership's going to be. I don't know. But we're not just going from the upper six. We're going all the way down to 6,100. I brought up before the show a guy that I just couldn't believe was popping up. And again, you just kind of have your text chain with your guys and you talk about players. And, you know, I play with a lot of guys down here in Southern California. There's a guy named Chan Kim at 6,100, Arizona State alum. Finished tied for 23rd at the PGA Championship, and I didn't even know he existed. So I'm just going to throw that into the atmosphere. Here, absolutely loves the golf ball. Won the sectional out here in Southern California by a lot. Was coming in 500, 750 to one in a lot of spots where you could nab that number. But I think there's some game there. There seems to be a lot of game there. Can I talk either of you two into him? I think other than that, like 6.5K Steele, Brendan Steele seems like a guy you can possibly go to, but anybody under 7K. And then am I just the craziest person in the world for playing Chan Kim?
I don't think you're crazy at all. I mean, that's the type of player. Like he hits it a mile. I mean, if he gets any kind of hype on the greens, I mean, at the very least, you're going to get a made cut out of him. If these are the type of players too, they make the weekend, you know, it's like, it's all gravy. So, I mean, he could definitely has the chance to shoot like a 70 or something on the weekend, which would be a very good score, by the way. I'm not trying to like suggest that that's bad. So yeah, I you really got to parse down in here, but I mean, bringing up a guy like Chan Kim is, I don't know. I know like half these people. I there's nobody else that even sticks out to me a little bit down there. Paul Barjean maybe from the Korn Ferry Tour, I guess. That's who I would play. My guy, and I'll throw him out quickly. Did you guys see what Jimmy Walker did at the Memorial?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep. Jimmy Walker.
Played him at Showdown.
Jimmy Walker love it.
Great. Torrey Pines record, man. The last time he finished top six on tour, he then finished second at the Players. Like I'm all about Jimmy Walker this week, man. I am very much on this train. He gained strokes off the tee, gained 7 strokes on approach. This guy can just light it up on the greens, and we know he loves the West Coast. So I'll live and die there. I could be a blip, whatever. I don't care. I'm playing him. Like I bet him top 20 at like plus 1400. I would rather bet Jimmy Walker top 20 than John Rahm to win outright. That was the decision I made this morning. So I'm in.
That in the hot takes bucket. That can be the hot take. We can go hot take here. Max, bring us home. Give me a hot take and anybody under 7K there that you like. That's going to be a hot take by default.
I'm going to talk you guys into Johnny Vegas.
Playing
really, really well. Second to the Palmetto, gained 7.7 strokes off the tee. 3.5 in approach, and actually gained strokes putting as well. And it's not the only time he's gained 7 strokes off the tee. 4 tournaments ago at the Wells Fargo, 7.5 strokes off the tee. The guy smokes the ball. He's driving it really well, and he can score. So, like, as far as DK points, he can get you DK points in bunches. I love the Kim call. I am going to play a Kim lineup in the 888 just for you, buddy. So we're going to get there together.
So I get 10%, right? If you play Vegas, Walker, and Chan Kim, you'll have 10,200 left over.
That's
who's
amazing.
Doing it?
Let's party. Oh my gosh.
I'll play Vegas and Kim together, and I'll play all the chalk up top, and then I won't even worry about it because they're going to be like 1% out.
I'm making a Monday first lineup, first look lineup, just for you boys with those three. Absolutely loved it. Max, Jeff, had an absolute blast today. Thanks for letting me sit in with you guys. Hit that like button and that subscribe button on the way out. That's Jeff. That's Max. I've said their names a lot, but they are fantastic stalwarts of this industry. Absolutely enjoy being able to work with both of you. We will see you guys again tomorrow, Tuesday. Tuesday, we're going to have myself, Ben Ross, on. Wednesday will be the Live Before Lock that we're going to have. Jason Roslin will be on that one. So check out all his thoughts throughout the week on his sleepers, on all his fades, all of the great video content that he's putting out for Osmo. But with that, we are out. Take care.